Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This episode went really long. So this is the first part of a two-part episode that you can listen to in bites. If you'd rather have a full-length episode for 2.5 hours that you can listen to all at once, please go earlier into the feed or onto the website at nimloss.org and download that.
We are the Borg. Your biological opinions are irrelevant. Your comments are irrelevant. You shall be assimilated into our nutty debates. Resistance is futile.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. You are tuned in for a special episode of Nutty Bites, where we are going to be discussing Patreon, crowdfunding, and how to support content creators. With me today, I have Mr. Scott Roche.
Hello.
I have Dej Slusher.
Howdy, everybody.
And I have James T. Wood.
Hey, how's it going?
And every one of these people are, they each have a Patreon campaign, and I still don't know what that word is for somebody who owns one. Dave is new, and both Scott and James have been going really producing content for about since August, but started last summer-ish, beginning of the summer. So, Patreon. What is Patreon? Who wants to fill everyone in on this interesting site?
I can jump in there. I actually got to have a few beers with the founder of Patreon, a guy named Jack Conti. He is in a band called Pamplemousse, French for grapefruit.
I love Pamplemousse. They're so great.
Yeah. And they were putting out these awesome videos that were getting millions of views on YouTube, and through the YouTube advertising and all that, they were making $50, $100. And that wasn't even beginning to pay for production, all of the set design, all of the stuff they were doing for their videos. And so Jack got together with some friends. They're based out of San Francisco, and they started looking at alternative ways to do things. You know, the crowdfunding model of Kickstarter or Indiegogo, those kinds of things, is really feast or famine sort of situation. And so they wanted something that was a little bit more consistent. Really, the bottom line is it started for people who are making awesome videos on YouTube to find a way to keep making more videos on YouTube.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, it was really definitely something that I think Jack started to monetize, to help YouTube people monetize what they were doing, because there were no good tools for them to do that. And, ad funding, because most people use ad blockers or this or that, you know, there's very little ad funding. So,
and do you really want to make somebody watch a 2-minute ad to watch your 5-minute video or however long minute video?
Exactly. Exactly.
So I'm trying to remember when I joined as a patron. I'm going to think it was probably not long after the site went live, because I want to say it's been maybe at least a year. I started joining. I joined and I started supporting Scott Kurtz and several. At the beginning, it was almost all webcomics guys were the ones that I was supporting. I didn't support podcasters until very recently, because for the most part, like the people that I subscribe to, I don't think anyone in my list has had a Patreon account until very recently. I was well acquainted with it as a patron, but very new to it as the term we don't know yet.
Yes.
As the patriate.
Whatever.
I don't know.
Yes, we'll have to come up with a word for that.
The beauty of the Patreon model is it lets everybody come up with their own title. Because when you set up your Patreon page, it asks you what you want to be called. So I picked Genre Mixmaster and Short Story Ninja. So that's what I am.
And that's a very apt title, I think. Yeah, I think Patreon has been really great for, as you said, the YouTube creators, the webcomics, and then it started to branch into authors and into podcasters. Now, authors, a lot of times, you know, how do we support authors? Well, we go and we buy their books. But how do you support authors who aren't being published all the time, or you really can't support too much without being, you know, paying into a magazine that is publishing them and so forth. And how do we get that money to that creator to inspire them? Because the idea of a patron, and I've always been a big fan of this word because, and specifically as an artist, back in the old days, artists had patrons. You know, somebody would pay for you to live and eat, and they would pay for your expenses, and you would create art for them. And it was a great idea, and it doesn't work anymore because it's the modern age, and everybody is expected to have their own job and to pay for their own life. And if you want to create, that's something extra that you do. And if you're very, very lucky, you end up getting a book deal, or you get signed in, if you're a band, you get signed onto a label. But even then doesn't seem to really be the you know, crowning achievement that it used to be. I mean, Stephen King, it may be one of the last writers that's able to go into a cabin and just write and never have to actually do a day job. Whereas even authors who have quit their day jobs, they still have to promote, they still have to publish, they have to go to appearances, they have all the other things that come into it on top of writing. So for me, as I've rambled, I like this idea because it gets back to the idea of let's let these creatives do what they do best and let's support them in this way. As I've said to some people, I am a big fan of Scott Sigler. If he put up a Patreon, I would not be giving him money. Why? Because I buy every book that he puts out.
Mm-hmm.
But authors that don't have that kind of an outlet, I want to push them so that they keep writing, so that they get to a point where they have published deals or just that they can keep writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely not a model that works for every possible thing.
No.
I mean, it works best. So like when we talk about the things that we're supporting, they work best for, I think, for a creator that produces something relatively small at a consistent rate.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
What you could do, so, you know, there is an existing thing called like Storyteller's Bowl or something like that, where authors of longer work say, I think Lawrence Watt Evans was doing this, where you basically say, I want $50 a chapter. And, you know, you write a chapter and post it, and then people pledge to it. And when there's $50 pledged, you write the next chapter and post it. And you kind of go through a book that way. And unless, say, you are going to post your chapter, like serialize your work in progress to Patreon, like only to your patrons, there's really not a book author, there's really not a good way to make that model fit.
Right.
Other than it's just what you were just saying is this is to keep me alive while I'm writing. Mm-hmm. So it almost kind of makes sense to do makes more sense to kickstart a book at the end. So I we're going to find kind of this, you have kind of impedance mismatches on some of these models. And I think eventually we're going to sort out, you know, which tool you use for which problem. And
oh, Dave, that was such a geeky term. And I love it. The impedance mismatch. Oh, makes my heart happy. I've been struggling with exactly that in the stuff that I've been doing on Patreon. So I started writing short stories. And each one was about the length of a chapter in a book. And for me, I was writing short stories that they're all going to be backstory or sort of the connected to larger works, connected to novels. But I realized that that wasn't as clear to my readers, and so there wasn't a strong pull for the readers to want to come back week after week. And so I just started, actually today I posted the sixth chapter of a novel, and it's a sequel to a novel that I put out, about a year and a half ago, and I've been serializing it, and it's an action comedy. So it kind of lends itself to the serial, format. But I'm playing with those models to sort of see where am I going to find the best match, where am I going to motivate the most people. But I've noticed Patreon isn't a destination on its own. It functions well for YouTubers, podcasters, webcomic people who have their own destination and that funnel people back to Patreon to support them, whereas I don't have a strong destination. Right now, Patreon is my destination, and I'm struggling to get the organic growth that you might find on YouTube.
I think what And this is from my discussions with folks at Patreon and also from reading the stuff that they put out there for their creators. They really want to be a destination. They want you to post stuff there, whether it's your webcomic or your whatever. And they don't want to be a paywall per se. So they want you to put up stuff that people that are giving you money every month, your patrons. They want those people to be able to see it, but they also want the general public to be able to see it. And so what I've done, I've done a couple things in the time that I've been playing around with this model. I've put out short stories like James has. I've serialized a novel. I've serialized something that's, I guess, kind of a novel, but I'm taking more of an episodic viewpoint of it rather than a chapter viewpoint on each piece. And some of that stuff I put for patrons only. Some of the short stories I put for everybody to be able to see, because those I think give the short stories are a good short, one-off type thing that you can get a feel for my style as an author. And then if you want to go deeper into my stuff, you'll become a patron and you'll be able to see the longer form things that I put out. That's the way I've been treating it. So it's the one drawback to Patreon, and I've talked with them about this, is as an author, and James and Dave, you can probably speak to this, they don't have a lot of really any good tools for us to post longer form fiction. Because reading, they don't have formatting tools for the text, and just reading a big blocks of text is just not appealing. So what I've done is basically use Google Docs, and I've used that as a way. I put a link in all the stuff that I put up there. So you still have to end up going off the page to read it, but at least I've got a place for you to come to get to that content that's not my blog or Facebook or Twitter or whatever. So it's a bit tougher for us since we're not producing a visual or auditory work. Although I am planning on recording my stuff in audio format, and I'm sure that Dave is too. I don't know about James. So there's that possibility. But yeah, they're still developing tools for people that are dealing with text instead of audio or webcomic or video.
Absolutely. Now, there was a merger this week that happened after I decided we were going to talk about this. Does anybody know enough about the company that Patreon merged with?
I had never heard of it until that announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it, but I had heard of, the Vlogbrothers, Hank and John, and so I sort of knew about them. And I watched the announcement, and so I sort of got the backstory of everything. And it was that thing that happens in the world where two people had the same idea and started at the same time. From what I heard, Subbable, which was the name of theirs, they had 24 creators on their thing. So they hadn't really expanded their creator base very broadly. It was mostly the flagship, the Hank and John doing their thing, and then a few others that were in there. And once they hit a thing with Amazon was changing the payment system on them, and they said, instead of doing that, why don't we, join forces with Patreon? And that's the short of it.
Now, one of the things that I remember reading is, switch from Amazon to PayPal. But every time I've done Patreon, I've not seen an option for PayPal. Is that just something that's in the States, or were they quoted wrong?
That doesn't even register to me. I've used Patreon a few times, I've used Patreon a lot. Yeah. I have become a patron of several people, and I don't remember the payment options off the top of my head.
I mean, you can do credit card. I think that may be it.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. So I'm sure that maybe what I was reading had it wrong.
But I think
I was like, is this just a Canadian thing? Am I missing an option?
Well, as much as I do hate Canadians, you know my hatred.
Oh yes, totally.
I think that was probably more to do with the payout to the artists.
Maybe, right.
Was, you know, could they had the option to have to use PayPal as an option to pay the creators. And the other thing that's great about Patreon versus Subbable, so I'm kind of glad, you know, that they won the, it's not a battle, but, you know, I'm glad that they came out on top, is their payout to artists is much higher. Subbable is like 70%. Patreon is what? Not over 90%, I think.
Oh, that goes to answer our first question in the Q&A, by the way. Lynette from the Bicast says, "Hi, Nutty. Crowdfunding is great, but they sure take a big bite of the pie. Who do you recommend as far as fees go?" And again, it depends, I think, also what kind of crowdfunding you're going for. Are you going for a project that will be done and completed at a certain time, or are you looking for something ongoing? If 90%, that's a pretty good, I would say, for content creation. I don't know how that compares to, say, just accepting payment through PayPal.
Really, it's you only lose a few points. I mean, it's basically what you lose in Patreon, you know, PayPal gets a piece and Patreon gets a piece. Bennett, it's very reasonable. You know, when you look at the other sort of project crowdfunding options like Indiegogo or Kickstarter, definitely we're getting more as creators from Patreon than we do from the other two. But part of that is because you've got additional players, so there's more people that get a piece of the pie for those.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's really good information to know. And I would say, before anyone wants to start a crowdfunding project, is to really look at the different options that there are and to compare those rates. One thing that I do know for all the people that have run Indiegogos, Kickstarters, Pledge Music, and all the other ones out there, the biggest problems and roadblocks that they come into is when they underestimate the cut that's being taken, the taxes they'll have to pay on it, which, again, people are giving you money. You still have to pay taxes on that. That's income. And the cost of rewards. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But I just want to update that Yeti Sarge says it may be a Canadian thing, referencing PayPal on Patreon, because looking at the FAQ, they say you can use PayPal on their page. So they may just be blocking it for my IP here in Canada then. That's fine. I have no problem using my credit card. I actually prefer it that way because, again, less fees. I don't know if that would change how much goes to the artist or not. That would be a good question for Patreon themselves.
Well, kind of touching on that, the credit card idea is one of the things that kind of surprised me is, so Patreon is still, it's what, less than 18 months old as a platform. Yeah. And I kind of had the, it seems mature enough. I mean, it's got enough mind share and people talk about it enough that I kind of assumed that when I started this new campaign that I would be getting mostly existing Patreon users. Kind of like if you remember what Kickstarter was like 5 years ago, you essentially have two hills that you're climbing at the same time. One is to, I want you to come back my project, and also I want you to give your credit card to this third-party site that you haven't done before. So, you know, in that respect, Kickstarter has really won that war, in that I would imagine now when people fund a Kickstarter, 90, 95, 98% of those accounts pre-existed that and, you know, that, because they've already boiled that ocean, and there's, you know, millions of people with Kickstarter accounts. I was surprised. The last time I looked, over half of my patrons supported only one project, and that was me. And I really kind of expected it would be, you know, more of a, I expected I would be a net gainer from the platform rather than a net importer to the platform. And so that was actually surprising to me. But the upside of that is it suggests that there's still a lot of growth for more people to come in and be users.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I'm looking at my patrons right now, and, you know, I'm kind of all over the map. I've got a couple of people that I'm their only artist they're supporting. I've got twos and threes, and then I've got people that are supporting, you know, over 10. So, I'm bringing some new people in where I hope they will, you know, support other creators. but I'm also pulling in existing Patreon users. I think one of the hurdles that I've started to overcome, and that I think that in any situation like this needs to be overcome, is I'm being supported by other creators in addition to being supported by regular patrons. So in a lot of cases, you've got the early adopters where, you know, we're all creators and we're all supporting each other. So all this money is really
not going anywhere,
going into my pot and then going out and going into your pot.
And now so, everybody's paying taxes on it.
Right. and Patreon's making a slice and PayPal's making a slice over the money that's just sort of going in a circle. Like I'm supporting James, for instance, and James is supporting me. So really what we're doing is every month we're just sort of, you know, buying each other a beer. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that because one of the things that does is it increases visibility. So people go to James's page and they'll see he's supporting me, so they may come support me, you know, whatever. But you do have to bring in fresh blood. And so I'm seeing that happen for other, for myself and for other creators. One of these days when Patreon has the same cachet that Kickstarter has or Indiegogo has, then I think we'll start to see a lot more new people coming in to support these things. I think that the for me, if I wasn't a creator, the weirdest thing would be, and it's still the weirdest thing, is the idea that I'm not supporting an individual project. You know, even where you have, because something that your listeners might need to know about Patreon, there are two options as a creator that you have. One option is you can ask for your patrons to back you every month, whether you put anything out or not. And one option is for you to ask your patrons to back you every time you put something out. Now, James and I are the second model. Every time we put something out, you get, if we decide it's a paid post, because we can put out free posts if we want to, every time we put out a paid post, if you're a patron, you get dinged for it.
Yeah, I think actually all of you are using that model. Dave, mm-hmm. you're also per project as well, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And the upside to that as a patron is if I don't put anything out for 3 months, you don't pay anything out. So you only pay out if I put something out. And I think that works well. But then there are the creators that I'm backing that, you know, they get money every month. And just the idea of supporting somebody every month, whether I'm getting anything in return or not, is for some people, that's a hurdle that they have to overcome mentally. Do I want to support somebody whether I get anything out of it or not?
Mm, absolutely.
So, yeah. Thinking about Kickstarter and sort of the parallels between Kickstarter and Patreon, Kickstarter has become, in many ways, a shopping site, right? It was designed to be to support this project, but now a lot of times people go there looking for, ooh, I want the new Pebble watch, or I want the new, you know, card game put out by the Oatmeal or whatever, like, and so that drew me toward the pay per project payment system on Patreon. I thought it would be less of a hurdle to ask people to get over, so that I could say I'm giving you this in exchange for your money, rather than the sort of the traditional patronage model that you mentioned earlier on of, I'm just giving you money so that you can live, and then I expect you that you'll create stuff. Another thing that I've seen, and it's been a discussion lately, is some people are crying foul, you know, that Pebble went back to Kickstarter, or the Oatmeal went to Kickstarter, or Nathan Fillion and Alan Tudyk just recently did an Indiegogo for a show that they want to put out.
I'm a backer of that one.
I am a backer of that one as well.
I back that one and the Oatmeal card game.
And that one is a good argument as to why larger people can use Indiegogo. For instance, as they said, they don't trust the networks. And if they want to deliver to the fans, then the fans are going to pay for it. And that worked. But I actually have an email about all of that cynicism. So I want you to continue, and I will read that once we're done there.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And so I'm looking at right now at Patreon, just before the whole subable thing, they landed Amanda Palmer. So New York Times bestselling author, sort of a self-published phenom kind of thing. And at the same time, I'm both cheering, yay, Patreon is doing better, but also wondering if the little guys are getting shoved to the side for the visibility of the bigger people. And I see both sides of that, and I see positives and negatives on both sides. So I haven't fully formed an opinion right now, but just as I'm exploring this platform, when things like that happen, it makes me wonder if that's going to make it easier for me or harder for me to get new patrons.
That is definitely a big thought. And on the Amanda Palmer thing, I mean, I think Amanda Palmer helped put Kickstarter kind of like on the map in the mainstream eye. I mean, us geeks, we kind of already knew what Kickstarter was at that point, but her big Kickstarter made it into the New York Times. It made it all over the place. And everyone was like, oh my gosh, she's going to send a nude photo of herself to all of her backers if she gets $1 million. And everybody made such a big deal out of this and is like, yeah, but she has no problem with nudity, so it's not a big deal. So you're right. On the one hand, it can possibly bring more attention to Patreon, but will it overshadow the little guy? That's definitely an interesting question. And before we go forward, I want to read, this is an email from one of my listeners, Aaron Jackson. So this is kind of goes in the same theme. All right. So for the most part, I've got a positive opinion upon crowdfunding such as Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and Patreon, etc. They provide a medium for small to medium-sized groups to either get games made, such as Exploding Kittens. And by the way, he's also in the Q&A. Hi, Aaron. And he just said, yeah, Exploding Kittens. Oh, yeah. So, gee, I wonder what he backed. Or movies such as What the Dead Gentleman Studios Uses It For. However, I feel that while they provide a medium for these groups to get funding to make these projects successful, they've slowly become a place for groups to make projects almost with insane goals just because they know they have a vast following in order to create the project. This is one of the main complaints people have when have been making throughout the Exploding Kittens Kickstarter, which, full disclosure, I did back and was more than happy to get a game. My biggest complaint comes from groups using it basically as a pre-order system, like the Pebble smartwatch. They're already one of the biggest smartwatch makers out there, and yet they decided they needed to go to Kickstarter for one of their new smartwatches, and quickly broke the Kickstarter website with the sheer volume of people that came into the website. I also recall there being a bit of an issue with Veronica Mars when it raised as much as it did. While I believe these crowdfunding sites can be helpful, I'm beginning to feel as if larger companies may use them as a means of, oh, hey, we can get bunches of money this way.
Mm.
And I think that's definitely a good criticism. I do think that one of my big frustrations is somebody uses Kickstarter or Indiegogo to fund a project that they'd like to do, and they're successful in this project. So then they go back there for the next one. And I kind of feel like it should be a starting point. And mm-hmm. if you've established yourself and you have a headquarters and a full business, and I'm going to use Pebble as an example, because I just watched their new video for their new watch, and they've got this, they walk through their offices, they have everything set up. They're going to make the watch no matter what. So they've already set this up as a pre-order system. And is it just them exploiting it for marketing? Is it just them being lazy? I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what the deal is, but it does feel against the spirit. I feel like if you run a Kickstarter project, you shouldn't keep coming back to it for more and more money. You should be able to build yourself up to a point where you don't need it anymore. Yeah. Though some people will always need avenues like this. For instance, a radio station nonprofit that I've volunteered for years currently has an Indiegogo campaign going on right now. Every year they try to raise money for Fund Drive. This is how they support themselves. And last year they had some terrible water damage and they needed to raise more than they ever did before. And after years of dragging their feet, they finally got into the social media world and they did an Indiegogo campaign and they were able to raise the money and they were able to save their studios. So they're back using it again. I think in that case, it can work. And again, this is a once in a year thing. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm trying to build my business. Okay, you've helped me build my business. Now I'm back on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you've built your business, you should be able to move forward. I don't know. I'm rambling too much. What are your thoughts?
I agree with you. I'll use the Exploding Kittens as an example. I backed it. I'm glad that I did. I'm glad that they succeeded so well. Here's what I don't want to see happen. I don't want to see them come back in a year with another game. I want them to take the fact that they got, what is it, $8-9 million and fulfill all the orders that they got, but use part of that to put the infrastructure in place, build their own website, create a gaming company, you know, whatever they've got to do so that they now they've got their own thing. You know, it's they don't need Kickstarter anymore. Everybody that's a fan of it, if they're when they come out with a new game, we'll go to their website and we'll pre-order it over there. You know, I would like to see that not happen. I would like to see them not come back to Kickstarter in a year with another game. But for people like many of the authors that I support, you know, that don't have a publisher, that don't have the kind of million-dollar success story that other writers have had, keep coming back to Kickstarter, keep coming back to Indiegogo, and I'll keep supporting them. Until you get to the point where you are a Scott Sigler and you've got your own, in addition to his regular publishing deal, he's got Null Set Productions or Null Set Publishing, Empty Set, that's it. You know, he's got his own publishing empire, and he doesn't need Kickstarter. He doesn't need Indiegogo. He's got the mechanisms in place so that his fans can buy his books directly from him, and he takes care of all that. You know, if I get there one day, or if James or Dave gets there one day, they're not going to need it. But right now, maybe they do. So I don't mind seeing them going back again and again to get the money for their next project, or to use the money from Patreon for their next project, however they work it out.
Absolutely. I can agree with you on that, especially about the self-publishing. There's an author that I have bought every one of her children's books through I think she does them through Kickstarter. Yeah, through Kickstarter. And she's self-published, so she's not going to have somebody come in and be able to do that. And she's not, these children's books are not going to get her to the point where this is all she's going to be able to do and she can set up a business doing this. But they're good enough that I will come back every time. And I don't feel disappointed to see her on Kickstarter again. If she got, you know, a deal with Scholastic and she went to Kickstarter, I'd be scratching my head. Then again, yeah. So would Scholastic. They'd have a real problem with that.
I have mixed feelings, and I'd be interested to know what you all think about the Nathan Fillion, Alan Tudyk web series. Because I don't mind them coming to Kickstarter, because as actors and writers, they may not have the mechanisms in place to do this on their own. Because before you would do something like this on your own, you'd have to put all these mechanisms in place. They wouldn't necessarily be able to appeal directly to their fans. Now that they've done this and they've had this amazing success again, I'd like to see them not come back to Kickstarter. So again, I put them on the same page as I do the Exploding Kittens. One time, great. You know, two times, probably not so much. But I may be wrong, you know, so I'd be interested to know what you guys think about that kind of situation, about them coming back next time.
I agree. I think they should get their, you know, if they can get this web series off the ground, they should have a studio that can fund their own the next time. But I totally support them.
So here's Penn Jillette, about a year ago, when he started his campaign for his Director's Cut movie, which I am also a backer of, he went through on his Penn Sunday School podcast, he went through a lot of this thinking in an episode basically where they went live with that campaign. And I'm blanking on what site they used. It's not one of the top couple. It's the only time, you know, I was the first, you know, I was newly to that site when I backed that project. But he was pointing out how, so they made the Aristocrats, right? Him and Teller and their company made the Aristocrats. They made Tim's Vermeer, you know, both successful, both profitable, movies that were highly regarded, you know, good critical response. They said they were just barely in the black on both of them. So when you say these guys, you know, have access to a lot of capital, why do they need to come to us? He pointed out that he said, there's only so much of my own money I can put into these projects. So I do put my own money into this. What we're doing is increasing the reach of what we can accomplish by adding in extra money than we could. So instead of it being, you know, instead of making a $200,000 movie, we're making a $2 million movie.
It's a force multiplier.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it doesn't mean that they're not, you know, they're not going to stop the production when they run out of money, because they do have access to some capital, but, you know, they're not funding it 100% from their own war chest. And, you know, he kind of went through why that makes good business sense. Even when there's a backlash against people who have access, or I think it's more perceived access, because, you know, who are we to say who you can pick up the phone and get money from? Because I certainly don't know how readily Alan Tudyk can get somebody to write him a $1 million check. I'm going to guess not that easily. You know, yeah. I think it's probably more easier for him to get $50,000, $20 checks than $1 million check from somebody.
Yeah. Well, and I think Alan Tudyk is a good example for that, because Penn Jillette is a household name. If I say Alan Tudyk outside of Browncoats, how many people are going to know who that is?
Yeah.
Okay, it was Pirate Steve. Oh, I liked Pirate Steve. You know, I mean, outside of that, I mean, really, people don't know who he is.
Yeah, that's why I don't mind seeing, you know, a couple of actors come and do this, or even Penn Jillette necessarily, because like you said, I know there are a lot of expenses involved, and as wealthy as he may be compared to me, he's not movie studio wealthy. So depending on what kind of money you need to accomplish your project, I get not having it on your own, and I get maybe not having access to a studio. Well, I guess what I'm saying is, not so much how do you feel about them coming for the first time to crowdfunding, or maybe even for the second time, but how many bites do you get at the apple before you should really just have your own setup in place to do your thing?
Right. If you do it more than a couple campaigns, and when you're done, you don't have a functioning business that's generating its own capital, then maybe you've had enough swings at the pinata.
I like that analogy. That's a good one. So that was fundanything.com, by the way. And right. I've never actually funded anything through that. Were you a backer on fundanything.com?
I was. And that's the only thing I've ever backed on there.
Was it a good experience?
It was. Frankly, I did it a year ago. I don't remember much about it. You know, it was not a negative one. So
that's good to know.
But what it didn't do, here's an example. So what we're talking about. So Kickstarter has a brand. Mm-hmm. Patreon has a brand. Clearly, by the fact that I couldn't remember the name of the site, Fund Anything does not have much of a brand. You know, Indiegogo has a brand. Some of these things don't. Like, Brand Gamblin is doing his fundraising thing. I don't remember what site that's on.
Brand Gamblin definitely has a brand.
Brand Gamblin, I think, has done Kickstarter. He's done Indiegogo. Currently, he's doing something with GoFundMe.
He's been a personal.
That's a little bit different. Yeah, GoFundMe.
He's been a personal thing, but I don't even. But all I'm saying is that whatever site it was, I didn't even remember the site.
Yep.
So whether or not you remember where they're doing this, I think actually is some important data.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, and this gets back to something that you said earlier about fresh users willing to put their credit card information into a website. The thing that I think has Kickstarter going. What Kickstarter has going for it is that it's Amazon Payments. And as we've learned from the Subble thing, they're trying to take more of a piece of the pie. But people trust Amazon because we've been using them from almost the dawn of the internet. I mean, that's really the first. I think I purchased something from Amazon before I even purchased anything through eBay back in the early, early days. So people trust that. And so they're like, yeah, I can use Amazon Payments, no problem. And Indiegogo has been using PayPal, that whether or not you trust PayPal, you end up using them because sometimes there's no other alternative. Mm-hmm. I am not a huge fan of PayPal, especially PayPal dealing with tied to anybody's bank accounts, because I think that they've got too much power in that case. And people should be wise when using it. But I use PayPal. Mm-hmm. I've started using it more and more.
I got into writing, doing nonfiction and articles online, and the only way that they would pay me was through PayPal.
Nice. So PayPal was taking a cut of your pay.
Yes, but it came out of their side. Like,
oh, that's good.
I got what they agreed to, but still, I mean, I had to have PayPal for that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
One thing I'd like to talk about, and I don't want to monopolize the conversation, so if you've got any other topics, that's great, but what I'd like to touch on would be there are some people that I have backed on through Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and Patreon where they've sent their rewards. I've got everything that they've sent, and I still haven't opened it. I back people just because I want them to succeed. I may not necessarily – like there was a guy on Patreon who was making these crazy a cappella music videos of video game themes. And I thought that was just such a lunatic idea that I had to back it, and that's not my thing. So I backed him for probably 6 or 7 months just because I thought it was insane. And I don't know if that's something that you guys do. If you get a reward, like I haven't read all of James's stories, but I've been backing him ever since.
I haven't read all of yours, Scott.
So I mean, you know, because we don't have time, we're creators, whatever. But I'm curious, and I guess your listeners could answer in the Q&A or whatever. If you back something, do you always, you know, take advantage of that reward, or are you just backing it because you believe in the project and the outcome is not necessarily the meaningful thing?
Okay, Dave, when you get your audio back, we'll bring you back. Why am I talking to him? Sorry. This is going to cut out. I'm going to just send him a very quick text here. We're not hearing Dave because he lost his audio. Sorry. This is not fun for the people watching live, but that's what happens when you watch live. But
hey,
the live means you get to hear like people say swears and stuff that I cut out of the MP3 feed.
Poop. Poop and farts.
That
I don't know. I'm just trying to make it entertaining for people.
All right. So, you know, I have to say that on Patreon, I do that more. I have not read all of Scott's stories, but I've read quite a few of them. But when work gets busy, I go on and I go, oh, I'll get back to that later. I always have access to it. Whereas for Indiegogo and Kickstarter and the projects where I'm getting physical rewards shipped, most of the time I get those shipped to my sister in New York so that I don't have to pay extra shipping to Canada. It was especially funny when I was backing the Dakota Ring Theater project because it was coming from Canada, but it would have cost me more to ship into Canada. So whenever I go and visit family, it's like Christmas. And I have all these great presents waiting for me. But on Patreon, it's really more about supporting the people. And as long as they're writing, I'm happy. And I'm really a big fan of when it comes to the podcasts ones, because most often if you pay or don't pay, you're still getting the product. And I love that. Mm-hmm. Whereas and you might get some extra cool things, but if you pay or don't pay, you're supporting that person and you're making them do stuff. Not making them do stuff. Inspiring.
Enabling
them. Exactly. They can say to their spouse, I have to record a podcast. People are paying for it and not get flack. You know, they can justify the time out of their schedule to do it. And so I think that that's perfect.
The whole reason I went on the per creation model is because I had kind of a sketchy schedule for a while there. And I thought it was unrealistic and uncool to ask people to support me if I wasn't, if I wasn't doing a weekly podcast. Mm-hmm. And so I made it per creation, and my first milestone was to put me on a weekly schedule, which was met within like 3 days. So that almost kind of evened out in the wash, where it all, you know, really wasn't even an issue almost immediately into the campaign. But the side effect, like the softer kind of ones that I didn't anticipate, were now I feel like I have an explicit contract with a group of people that it's not just me half-assing around, that I not only do I owe them the schedule because I agreed to them that if they did this for me, I would go on a regular schedule. But now I feel like it's more incumbent on me for the quality of everything. I look at this and I'm thinking, is this worth people paying me $32 for this show? Mm-hmm. And if it's not, I don't want to do it. And so, you know, I was recording, you know, some fraction, like 80% of my shows in my car at one point, and I realized, well, I don't feel like that's reasonable to ask people to pay me money for shows I recorded in my car. Mm-hmm. So I recorded one in my car, but I put it up as a free you know, as a bonus episode, because I thought, well, you know, I'm not asking people to pay for, you know, what's a, essentially a sub, you know, a less than baseline quality show. So,
and so
it had those effects on me right away.
So far, you haven't had any episodes that aren't available to everyone anyway, right?
They're always available. So yeah. One of the first things that I did is, and I didn't actually even think about this ahead of time or promote it as such. It just sort of happened organically. Is I decided, since I decided I wanted to get on a routine, regular schedule, that I picked the day, and then just as soon as I can get the thing recorded, I post it to Patreon first. Mm. Now, it's one of these things that is an absolutely free perk. Cost me nothing to provide this to people other than, you know, working ahead. And it gives the patrons something that nobody else has, right? Which is, you know, 1 to 3 day early access to these shows. Mm-hmm. Now, me personally, as a consumer of podcasts, I have a 60-day long queue. So that doesn't, you know, so people offer that to me all the time, and I never do it because what am I going to do with that, right? Mm-hmm. But at least a couple of people, you know, at least a couple of people are doing, you know, are using it because they were giving me feedback on a show before it hit the public feed. So, you know, it's a thing that if people like, they can have. I certainly wouldn't care about it if the tables were turned. It wouldn't do anything for me, but, you know, it's a perk. It's a nice perk that I can give to everybody, you know, and if somebody was a 1 cent a show supporter, they would still get that, right? I do it to the all patrons no matter what level. And so, you know, it's just a nice thing that happened. And again, I'm feeling my way. Very little of this was premeditated. I tried to think through a lot of stuff, and I was asking people questions. And basically, the response I got from practically everybody was some variation of "shut up and take my money." So yeah. I just decided to think less and do more.
Well, you are a big supporter of the program Flatter, which I tried, mm-hmm. and I could never get it to work right.
Yeah.
And it just made me feel like a dummy where I'm like, I'm not this dumb. I know I'm not this dumb.
Well, so I'd love to talk about Flatter versus Patreon if you want me to.
To flip the other side of what Dave was saying, so I today just put up my second private post. The first private post that I put up, and private meaning only patrons can see it. Everything else I've done was public. The very first one that was private just for patrons was links to ebook versions of everything else that I've ever written, other than the short stories that were going on Patreon. Because I was feeling guilty for them not being able to get something. And so I've been serializing a story, and today was the very first chapter that went up. It's the sixth chapter, so the first five are free for anybody to read. And I put it up as private, just for patrons, partly because I've been feeling guilty that my patrons are subsidizing stuff that everybody else is getting for free, rather than, you know, thinking about it the other way around. And I'm not sure exactly where I land on this. I like both sides of that. You know, like you know, we all said, we want to be accountable in some sense, you know, that we're not going to ask the patrons to give us money if we're not producing something we feel is worthy to be paid for. But then I feel like the patrons are sort of getting screwed a little bit if they don't get something that that nobody else gets, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I one of the things that I do, in addition to the posts that are for patrons only, like the serialized novel that I put out and stuff, if you're a patron, at the lowest level, you will get basically everything that I put on Patreon, you can only read on your computer. You click the link, you read it on your screen or your device or whatever. You click the link, you can read it, but you can't save it. So my patrons, depending on what level they get, depending on what level they pledge at, will either get a PDF or an EPUB of the work, either when it's finished to my satisfaction enough to give it to them, or when it's actually published. So one of the consequences that happened that I didn't think about was I put out a story on Patreon, and then when I decided to publish it, I published it with, and I just published this in the last couple of days, I published it with a second story that never appeared on Patreon for anybody. But because my patrons backed that first story, when the two what would you call that? It's not a triptych. I guess it's a diptych.
You're a diptych.
Yeah, yeah. When the two stories went up on Amazon this week, I said, well, you know, you're my patrons. I promised you you'd get this story when it was published. So you're also getting this other story for free because you basically already paid for it. So it's not really for free. But so, yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely good to think about what you can do for your patrons because they believe in you, because they're backing you. But the flip side of that is, and speaking as a patron, I'm not backing you because I'm going to get stuff. And that was kind of my question. You know, I'm backing you because I believe in what you're doing. I want you to be able to make some money off of it. If as a result I get something that nobody else gets, okay, that's great. But I want to enable you to put your stuff out there for other people to enjoy. So for me, it's not important to get something that nobody else gets. Even if it's for a couple of days, you know, I just want you to put stuff out there. But yeah, I definitely think that it's not a bad idea because not everybody is like me to have that as an option.
Well, I think this is a perfect segue to read some more emails. This one I got from Hugh O'Donnell, which, by the way, has a Patreon. So please go and back him. He's pretty great. He's got the Way of the Buffalo podcast. It's all about short stories and showcasing creatives. And he's also an author, and he's got some really great short stories. He says, hey, can't make tomorrow's cast, but I would like to comment that Patreon is awesome because it allows me to support people's work at a level I can afford on a regular basis and vice versa, obviously. And I want to mention that. So I've said to people, and I don't remember if I've said it during this call or not, but I say to people all the time, I am broke. And when you are looking at me, like, nobody wants to see my tax statement. You really don't. Because I am an artist, and that's what I do for a living. So when they say starving artist, they mean it. But with Patreon, I can give a tiny amount, you know, a dollar here, a dollar there, 25 cents there, whatever, you know, and it ends up being something that I can afford. And in addition to that, on Patreon, you can set caps for how much you're willing to spend a month. So, for instance, Dave, he participates in Dog Days of Podcasting. So he's going to be putting out 30 podcasts for the month of August. So what you can do is you go in there and you say, all right, I'm backing each of his episodes. But you can put a cap so that you're not spending, say you did a dollar an episode, you're not spending $30 for the month of August and go, whoa, where did that come from?
Well, and just to point out, too, I'm not going to have 30 paid episodes that month.
But even so, if you did, or if right. A writer got into a writing spurt and said, you know what, I'm gonna do 30 short stories this month because I've got off from work the entire month, or whatever it is, you know, so you're able to manage it and you never have a surprise bill. And that's one thing that I really like, is you can sponsor people per creation or per month and never be surprised. And you can go around sponsoring different people and still set that cap for yourself for all of your campaigns that you're backing. So that, say you're supporting 10 different people, but generally each month only 3 of them produce anything. Say one month all 10 of them produce something. Again, you're not surprised by a large bill.
I've had people come to me and say, you know, dude, I'm sorry, I backed you at this level. I've got to scale it back because things are tough. And I'm like, seriously, whatever you need to do, don't apologize for supporting me. I mean, you know, whether it's for a dollar a month or, you know, I've actually got somebody that I don't know, and this is insane. I have no idea who this person is, who's backing me at one of my topmost tiers. I still haven't figured out, and I'm not asking. You know, wherever you feel comfortable, don't apologize for supporting me. You know, or don't apologize if you've got to stop supporting me for a while. But the thing that I love about Patreon is, on the creator side, it gives us the option to give stuff away for free, to decide what we want people to pay for. And then it gives you, as the patron, the control over your budget to say, okay, I've got this month I can do this much, and you've got until the end of the month as a patron, because you don't get charged until the last day of the month. And if things go south on the 25th and you're like, I've just got to put a cap on that, then go ahead and put a cap on that. So it's a beautiful amount of control that you get on both sides of the coin. And that's one thing that I love about Patreon.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm really trying to. So the generosity of the people that were the early supporters, I guess, shouldn't have surprised me, because those, you know, the people that are going to jump on first are the most invested, and kind of the people who are, you know, kind of, I had a core of people, mostly people who were flattering me. And I emailed those people and said, you know, asked them about this. And I said, do you feel like I'm trying to double dip? Do you feel like I'm trying to soak you, you know, by saying, look, you've been generous this way, now give me more money in a different way? And that's where I got, you know, largely the shut up and take your money responses. But what I unintentionally, you know, kind of that idea of like the writer who has the mailing list, it sort of turned into that, where I want to say 80% of those people supported me within that first week. That, you know, from that email, those people that I was asking questions for, and then I just said, okay, thanks for all your input, it's live. And most of those people went and supported me within, you know, 24, 48 hours. But now I feel like I've got, in some ways, I've almost got a top-heavy distribution. I have very few people supporting me under a dollar. And I'm not at all kidding, and I'm trying to emphasize the fact that I would be delighted to get some nickel a show supporters. You know, I have 25 cents a show as my bottom thing, but you're not prohibited from putting less than that, and I don't care. You would still get the early episodes. I'm trying to get that across to people. The guys from Cord Killers, which I think maybe was the very first thing that I supported on Patreon, point out that there's a loophole in the system, which is that your card doesn't get dinged until $10. So if the only thing you supported was, say, 10 cents a show, you're going to support them for a long time before you ever have to pay the first time. You know, you'll have built up this, you know, this basically queue of charges, but they don't hit your charge for 10, they don't hit your card for 10 cents. So there's no downside to kind of having pledges at the bottom end. And I really want to, it seems weird to ask people to give, I don't want to ask people to give me less money. I just want people who aren't giving me money to give me a low amount. You know, I'd like to have, I would love to have hundreds of 1 cent patrons. That would be fine, perfectly fine with me.
And that's the thing. You know, I mean, people can pledge at any level. The levels that we set up as creators, you know, at this level you get this, at this level you get that. That's not set in stone. I mean, just because my lowest pledge point is a dollar doesn't mean you can't back me at 50 cents or 10 cents or whatever. And people think, well, that's nothing. But if I got 1,000 people to give me 50 cents for everything that I put out, that's $500. I'm okay with that. You know, I really am okay with that. So yeah, I mean, don't feel bad as a patron if you can't give a bunch of money. It's okay. We're okay with getting a little bit of money over getting no money. Either way, I want you to be reading my stuff. If you can't give anything, you're going to be able to read some of my things. But if you can only give me a dollar a month, that's cool. Give me a dollar a month. Go tell 25 of your friends to give a dollar a month. That's $26 a month. So, you know, so it's a force multiplier.
And it there's this old story about, you know, the people at church, and, you know, the rich man goes and he puts $100 into the collection plate. And then the struggling family, you know, the mother puts in a dollar and the daughter puts in 25 cents and the daughter feels, you know, mom, I'm not doing enough. I mean, I haven't given enough to the poor. Look at that man. He gave $100. I can never get to that point. And it's like, no, you're actually giving more, because I'm expanding on the parable. Percentage wise, you're giving more of yourself than this rich person who, you know, $100 is like a penny to them. And then it, you know, makes the girl feel good and she becomes a charitable person. I'm very bad at paraphrasing, but the being able to support people that you enjoy their creations from, that you enjoy their creativity, it gives you, I don't want to say ownership, but it makes you feel good, like you're part of something. There is a podcast that I give a little bit to every month through PayPal. They don't have a Patreon, but I've been enjoying their podcast for so long that I just felt like I really want to give something. And they never ask for it. they have the button on their site, but they never ask for it. And I just say, you know what? Yeah, let me give some of this because I've been enjoying this for free for so long, and let me do something. And I feel good about it. And when I listen to the episodes, I feel good about it, even though I'm not giving that much. And I think that Patreon's really good because it gives your fans and your listeners and your readers that opportunity to feel like they're part of something.
Mm-hmm. And they are. And that's the other thing I tell people, you know, whether you're my fan or Dave's fan or Nutty's fan, if you could give $0, the best thing you could possibly do is go tell a buttload of people about this thing that you love. You know, I would rather have reviews at this point than 50 cents. If you want to give me 50 cents in a review, that's awesome. But, you know, it's also about discoverability. And that's another thing that Patreon is working on is their discoverability piece, which is how to find new people. The fact that you are backing, whether it's through Patreon or through Kickstarter or through the PayPal button on Flash Pulp's website, and I'll go ahead and shout out since you wouldn't give
me. You totally knew exactly who I was talking about.
You're a backer of yours too, and I'm part of Dead Robot Society, and I keep telling Justin, we need to get on Patreon, because people want to support what they believe in. People want to support what they enjoy, whether it's through a review or $1 a month or whatever, you know, writing a review on iTunes, you know, whatever it is, people want to support you if they believe in you. And it's communicating that to the creator. So however you can communicate to the creators that you enjoy, hey, I love what you're doing, whether it's money, an email, a voicemail, a review, whatever you can afford time or money wise means tenfold to the creator, at least at our level. Maybe not so much at Stephen King's level, but at the level that we're playing at, you know, whatever you as a fan can give is 10 times whatever you think it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we love our fans, right? And that connection with the fans is so incredibly important. But one of the, I even hesitate to call it a weakness, but one of the things that's happening between sort of traditional historical patronage and all of that, and what we've got now is that historically people could, they could be terrible at public speaking and introverted and, you know, all of that, and still just be good at their craft and have a patron. Whereas now, you have to be awesome at social media. You have to be able to be in front of people. You have to be able to connect and share your passion with people. Those of us here are pretty good at that. But I wonder then about, you know, the author who is terrified of email, let alone social media, you know, and are we, through this sort of move towards crowdfunding, are we losing some of those voices from art?
Mm-hmm. That's a fair point.
It's a good question. I actually have a friend who is a new author, and as he says, what he cares more about over ebook sales is he just wants to get some reviews on his books. And he's not social at all. I may be, you know, one of his few friends that he still talks to. And it's a struggle for him, very difficult, because he can try the social media, but if you're just not good at socializing, what do you do? That's when you need to get a mouthpiece for you.
I look at some authors that I know that either aren't very good at it or don't have time, and they actually, in some cases, have. You know, I'm thinking of A Real Girl for Scott Sigler. I mean, mm-hmm. Scott's not bad at social stuff, but it's nice to have a less insane mouthpiece.
Yes.
through A Real Girl, or the case of the people that aren't as vocal. That's even more important for the fans that they do have to step up and be the cheerleaders for those writers. But you're right. I mean, how does a brand new creator break in to the scene? And that's where you have to be, if you're bashful in front of people, that's where you at least have to be willing to approach other creators and say, hey, can you help me out here? You know? So yeah, that's That's one possible solution. But yeah, that's tough.
Dan the Art Man's Book Reviews, a podcast where I share my book reviews with you. I go about my reviews a little different. I try not to like summarize the book. I just kind of try and tell you how I felt about the book, why I liked it, why I didn't, and that's about it. Mostly I read sci-fi and fantasy, but I also try and read broadly Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, 11/22/63 by Stephen King. DanTheArtMan.com.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.